Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. I just want to give you an update on this missing Titan sub.
Yeah.
They're 96 hours into a 10-hour trip, and they are at minute zero now in terms of the math of how much oxygen they had on there for five people. Now, this is good math. Five people, all systems running.
Yeah.
On a vessel that's not known to have all systems running.
Right.
Perfectly ever. So, not great.
Yeah. I think somehow they're still alive. I think if they're that smart, you probably thought of some way to try and, like, limit your breathing or remain calm. They said that one guy who's on there is a very, very calm person, and they think that they're more utilizing his brain to try and figure out how
it's
to survive.
It's the Hamlin.
Hamish guy, yeah.
Hamlin Hamish or
that
whatever
was it,
his
something
name
like that. Ham and cheese, something like that. Yeah, that guy. But apparently he's, like, really smart. So maybe he's maybe they're, like, you know, doing yoga or whatever, like something to calm themselves down so they don't breathe as much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But if you're there, you're worried already, then some dude does yoga, I'm more anxious. I'm yelling that. What, seriously?
Well, not
you're
the
yoga
poses.
Guy right
not,
now?
Not the poses.
Now I'm losing air.
Meditation. That was a meditation, not yoga. Yeah. Big difference.
You don't want a relaxed, chill guy there showing off that he's like, it's all cool. That you're freaking out. You can't get out. So I'm losing my air while he's getting extra
air. What you
air.
Could do is you could do the hold your breath challenge and then limit the amount of oxygen. hold your breath 60 seconds.
So you think they're still alive?
I think they're still alive, yeah. I think somehow they're still alive. Not much time left, but I think they're still alive.
There was one guy who suggested a scenario. Because it's not only just oxygen, it's also, are you cleaning the air that you're breathing?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if that system goes down, you have a real problem.
Yeah.
Real fast. And they said, as that thing starts to run its course, they can discombobulate it, take it apart, and then lay it out on the floor as a last-ditch effort to get some time out of it.
Uh-huh.
Every piece of footage I've seen on the interior of this Titan, there's no panels you can unscrew.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't have
a cylinder.
It looks like clean, solid metal walls.
Like the inside of a can.
Yes. That little wing tip at the end.
Yeah.
The tip of the whale tooth.
Yes.
That's where the oxygen tanks are.
Oh.
And it looks like it's completely separated from. So I don't know if they were able to, like, just start taking stuff apart. And,
right. Maybe that's the banging. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone got squirrely and got in the ductwork. Like, maybe you could try to do that, but it would still be. You're exerting so much energy to do that.
It's a lot.
Like Bruce Willis in Die Hard.
And then not a lot of people talking about the temperature.
Yeah, it's cold.
Yeah.
It's cold, really cold.
Yeah. Now, five people in there with body heat.
Yeah.
Does that help?
That helps.
That's some cuddling.
Let's start cuddling.
Yeah, there's a lot of spooning going on, I'll tell you that much, yeah.
You don't want to be middle, dude.
But don't get excited. Don't get excited.
There's five. One guy's just chilling in the middle.
Right.
That we're talking about since Sunday bathroom. Too as well, like
people
gotta go
pooping.
There's you gotta do it.
Well, you didn't bring days of snacks down.
No, mm-hmm. You did not, and it's probably pretty stinky in that tube.
What if one guy did, and they find out, like, you got snacks, bro?
Right.
And you're like, oh, he's got the Oreos. Yeah, right.
What's that crunching sound?
<He's just joking. laughs>
Nothing.
I found it outside.
Seriously, goldfish? How ironic.
You're right, they're rationing up the goldfish. Each one gets a goldfish per hour.
They're all fish. Goldfish, Swedish fish.
Right.
It's got all the fish snacks.
Right, right. Anchovies.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to have a good end result.
No.
I'm remaining optimistic.
We all want that moment where, you know, they ratchet off the last bolt and open that hatch, and then you see them all walk out like astronauts.
All disheveled.
After the Apollo or space shuttle mission. Hey!
Needing a shower badly.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. When that lid comes off.
It's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah, I think they're still alive.
Yeah?
I think they're still alive.
I'd like to know, you know, because there's no news, and the news could be, and they should tell us, did the banging stop?
Right.
And the fact that they didn't say the banging's still happening tells me the banging stopped.
Unless they're too busy working to say, to tell me the banging's still going on. No, I forgot. I was too busy working this robot over here.
Nah, they're quick to give us good news to stay hopeful.
Yeah.
They don't want to give us bad news.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
And it was all their health was pretty much on the up and up. They all got tested through all that stuff, right? So, like,
I think the one test you had to get through is do you have $250,000?
Right.
That was the main health test.
Yeah, that was the
one person could be. you don't have to say that, but one could be deceased, another chilling with one dead dude. Like, that's even crazier and grimmer.
Like, right. Like you choke.
You almost want all five to go. You don't want anyone to go. I'm not saying that. But if you did, you almost want all five to go at the same time. So you're not there chilling with dead dudes.
Or no, if it means three live because two died, so therefore now they have
extended oxygen.
No, logically, yeah. Oxygen. Out loud, I want to say I don't want anyone dead because people already hate me. But I'm saying you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
More air, less dudes. Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do it. I thought it was brilliant. If it is them, every 30 minutes tapping.
Yeah.
Because it gets everybody's mind right. It's like, okay, we have a task every 30 minutes.
Right.
AJ, you're the timekeeper. You let us know. So-and-so, you're going to bang the hammer this time around. Yeah. Like, now you have an assignment. You have work schedule.
Yeah.
It's 30-minute intervals. It keeps your mind occupied. Because imagine just sitting there hour after hour after hour with nothing.
Yeah.
That 30 minutes breaks up a lot of time where your mind can get away from you.
Right, right. The only problem is if you take the hammer and you hit too hard, pouring in. Damn it.
Used an ice pick.
Right.
Now you made it
for
worse.
For God's sake, you gave it to the strongest person here. What's wrong with you?
I wanted them to hear us.
Why did you smack the glass?
One taller guy still talking a little.
We sound like a bad Italian movie.
Wow. Be crazy if you found them and they're like, we're fine. One guy likes to tap dance. We love it. We're just doing like the Ben Vereen stuff. It's like, all right.
He kept us entertained for hours. Boy, I tell you, we got to see him when he breaks into the finale there.
Yeah, we just hit extra lives on this video game joystick we have. We're fine.
There's a very small percentage of people on the planet having heard everything about this thing would get in it. And let them bolt those 17 bolts or whatever it is.
Yeah, no way.
And they're lying.
I don't care if it's sitting in someone's living room and getting it.
No.
They're lying. Even those people are lying to say, like, I would do it. No one's doing this.
No one's going to do it.
No, it's the surprising thing that they were smart people. Like, if we heard, hey, yeah, a bunch of hillbillies made this. I love hillbillies, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of hillbillies made this barrel and they went down in the lake.
Right.
You know? It's like, okay, I could see how they thought this was a good idea.
We done made a submarine.
But people who have made billions of dollars in business and engineering and scientists got in there like, yeah, this seems like a good idea.
Yeah, game controller, sure, why not? I saw it for sale for $30 on eBay.
You can be book smart and life stupid. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
you can read all the books you want. You're still like, because you think you're so smart, you can outthink, hey, death trap in the water. You know what I mean? So hillbilly wouldn't get in.
No, they were smart.
He put a critter in there.
Right.
Yeah, they used some real crappy parts on this thing.
Yes, they did.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely some Gilligan's Island stuff going on.
I don't think Gilligan's Island stuff was better.
Yeah, and I have to think that if the controller, the thing that's controlling your direction, which is going to keep you from, you know, smashing into the Titanic, is a $30 item that they didn't put a tremendous amount of money in the carbon dioxide.
Right. And how are the batteries in the
air tanks?
Yeah, sometimes the top button stick.
Right. Body blow.
When I saw recondition, like they made it in 2011.
Yeah.
And reconditioned, it's $30 on Amazon. I was like, okay.
Yeah, at least want a Wii controller.
I'll be over here. I have billions of dollars, and I think I want to live.
Next time, just give me the money.
You don't want to buy your sub on Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, right. I found a motor.
He was kind of bragging about it in the CBS thing, too. He was like, yeah, and these lights from Camper World.
Yeah, look how frugal I can be.
You don't want the word world in anything you bought for that.
Yeah. There are rich people who are really cheap.
Yeah, that's how they get rich.
Yeah.
Saving.
Yeah, but when it comes time to go 12,500 feet below the surface of the ocean.
Yeah. No, you don't want to do that.
Nah. Yeah.
All the snacks are store brand.
Yeah, you don't want to shop retail.
The latest news is, one, mathematically, all things being correct, they're out of air.
Yeah.
And two, they got this Victor 6000 deal that I've never heard of, but sounds really cool.
Very impressive.
It's being rushed to the scene. It looks like it's the Borg from Star Trek Next Generation. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, but I think
it's just
this
square mechanical thing.
Okay.
And it could go down almost twice the amount of distance that the Titanic's heading. So
that's
this
a good
thing,
start.
No problem.
Yep.
It's got robotic arms and stuff. There's 25 people in a ship controlling all different jobs that it does. And its job is to go and find the Titan. And if it's stuck somewhere, unstick it.
Yep.
And then it also has a cable attached to it. It would take the cable off of itself, attach it to, can you believe?
Like the Bruce Willis.
It's insane.
Wow.
And then it would attach it to the Titan, and then they would pull the Titan up.
Right.
They need to make little ones to find my keys. Little board. Just set them to your house. They go into the couch. They go flying in.
Well, they're going to just grab a machine that yes. they have in the rest stops.
It's right. terrible that's happening, but they got to be psyched to get to use the Borg.
Yeah.
You know
right.
what I mean?
What was it doing before this?
Yeah. Bring me Victor. Oh, we're going to use Victor.
Yeah. Victor 6000. My Victor! New DJ name is coming through. Like, that's me, Victor 6000.
Well, you know, I'm looking up other missions this thing has done. I mm-hmm. haven't, you know, seen anything, but if this, I would be shocked if this is its first time down to the Titanic.
Oh, it says
it
here,
seems like this is where you use the arms to pick up little trinkets and
this thing's yeah, been
bring them up.
Yeah.
It says here, reach the last olive in the jar. Nice. I can't do that. My fingers aren't long enough.
That's the only test that failed.
Yep. Crush the olive.
Damn it!
Makes a terrible
olive.
Martini.
Yeah, that's right. It's got robotic arms. I wonder if in the garage, it's like, hey, man, see if it'll shake up a martini. Right. Just for the hell of it.
Wait, too much vermouth, Victor.
Yeah. And after you took martini, it's like, you know, I'm feeling kind of randy.
Or can it play ping pong? Set it up at the end of that table.
Right. Yeah. You know, one guy's going to the emergency room with that arm stuck to something.
How's your beer pong game,
what did you,
Victor?
What did you use that for? My zipper wouldn't work.
All right, real quick, I want to play you this least excited 911 operator I've ever heard in my life. It was a call that came in to a Connecticut 911 service regarding a bear in a house in Connecticut.
Canton police.
Yes, how you doing? My name's...
How you doing?
My son just called me. He's home alone and says there's a bear inside the house.
Where is this?
I'm heading there right now, and I'm on the road. I figured I'd just give you a call.
All right. And does he know where the bear is, or how did the bear get in?
He was just called me in a frantic. He said there's a bear inside the house.
Does he know where the bear is, or how the bear got in?
Right. He sounds like he's stretching. Anyone know where the bear is? He's got like that day, like when you just woke up.
Yeah, you just woke me up. Good morning.
Yeah, because I know where the bear is.
And are his responses going to be different if the kid does? Yeah, back door. Yeah, he's in the bedroom now looking at clothes.
And I like how the father...
Came in through the skylight on a zip line. Yeah. Like, really weird.
I like how the father is like, yeah, this is a panic moment. Hi, how you doing? How you doing? Not, there's a bear in the house and my kid's in there.
Yeah.
Hey, hi, how you doing?
He's
you
a good? Friendly guy.
Are you good? Okay, yeah.
We should try to get him on
Did
tomorrow.
I get you at a bad time? I'm sorry. Yeah.
The dad or the
hey,
guy? The caller?
Right.
No, the dad.
Oh, right.
He sounds friendly. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
I got a problem.
Yeah, listen, embarrassing my kid.
It's an emergency, but I still got time to be polite to you.
Hey, I'm right. cordial, yes.
I said I'm heading home right now.
All right, did he give you anything, any other information?
He didn't give me any other information at all.
Yeah, he was making a grilled cheese sandwich.
Right. The bear wants to know where the cheese whiz is.
I think I gave you the most important info.
Right.
Yeah, there's a bear in my house. Here's the address.
Right. We're out of milk.
Send help.
Get some guys up there, all right?
He sounds so uninterested!
All right, we'll get to it.
Not uninterested, disinterested right there. He's like, whatever, yeah. Dudes
I mean,
will be there.
It's Canton. This has got to be the most busiest thing you've got in a while. It's like, not like New Haven. I got like 15 people shot over here, yeah. And you got a bear. We'll get to you eventually. This is Canton. You probably did wake him up.
Just hold for a minute. I've got two serial killers online, too. Oh, hold on. Second,
we'll get some guys up there. All right.
All right.
He has to win an award at the company holiday party. Least interested ever.
All's missing is.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let me do something about this.
Or just the noise of him sucking on a big gulp or something.
He's making microwave burritos.
Let's talk to tribe member Bill in Madison, who spent 4 years on a nuclear submarine. Thank you for your service. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my pleasure.
What are your thoughts on this?
I think what a lot of people are not even thinking about is they keep talking about the oxygen. It's not the oxygen. It's the carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide that's building up as you're breathing in and out. If they don't have scrubbers or burners on board this 20-foot device, honestly, I'm going to give you facts. They're not alive.
Yeah,
they haven't been alive for a while.
Bill, can you talk into the mouthpiece a little bit?
Yeah, please. Can you? Is that better?
Beautiful. 100% better.
Thank you, sir.
Did you get that?
Yes.
Can you just repeat it?
Yeah. All right. So when you breathe, you come out with carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. Now, in a nuclear-powered submarine, it's so big that you have scrubbers and burners. You take your bad air and you either add chemicals to it or you cook it and you make better air with it. On a small thing like that, you have oxygen. That's great. But what are you doing with the bad air? Can't breathe it out.
Yeah. My guess, if they had a $30 controller to maneuver, to get this thing to make turns and stuff, they didn't put a lot of money into that system.
Yeah.
No. You know, the further down you go, the more pressure it's putting on the hull. Now, our military fleet of submarines can go deep, but not like that deep. They're big. The deeper you go, the smaller the craft has to be because there's so much pressure that's coming on the hull. I mean, you're talking 44 pounds per square inch. So a modern-day nuclear-powered military submarine goes down to, say, 1,000 feet. That's 440 pounds per square inch. That's like an elephant standing on your big toe.
Okay.
Now, you go down 10,000 feet times it by 10. That's a lot of pressure. So the facts, no, they're not good. It's not a good ending.
Yeah, and you
called it yesterday. I listened to your show yesterday. You know, a bunch of rich folk going out, and they're just running out of things to do on this planet, you know. So, yeah, you know, it's a lot of money to be spent on something that not too smart.
No, not too smart, especially when they're smart people, supposedly, who've made billions of dollars, some of them, in business.
Someone brought their kid.
You could just read, or if you watched the 10-minute CBS This Morning story on it, you could see that this thing was not really well thought out.
No.
And was kind of just a contraption. It was like chitty, chitty, bang, bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I looked at a couple pictures of it, and I kind of shrugged going, they're crazy. I mean, all the money invested, they should have done something better. I mean, really? They found this thing in 1985. Yeah, it's a big mystery, right? They looked for it for years and years. They finally found it. They took thousands upon thousands of pictures of it. Matter of fact, a week prior to them sinking, they posted online all the 3D renderings they have of this already.
Yes.
Why are we still going down and looking at it? Like, there's enough. I mean, what are you looking for now?
Yeah.
You know, I don't get it. I mean, that whole movie is what really opened people's eyeballs for it. But there's other shipwrecks that are down there 10 times. I mean, I can't say 10 times, but thousands of feet deeper. I mean, the Bismarck went down in 15,000 feet of water. One of our aircraft carriers in World War II went down in 20,000 feet of water. You can YouTube that stuff, and there's some deep, deep ship down there.
What's the one that's off the coast of Massachusetts? Andrea Doria?
Yeah, now that is diveable. They went down and they crashed into the Stockholm in the 50s in the fog. And they've dived that with gear, but they have to use helium because regular O2 doesn't work as well. So helium's for further diving, and they explored. It's only down a couple hundred feet. They were looking for some treasure on board for some rich folk that were coming across the
European. Sure. Looking for a safe
that thing has taken almost as many lives as the original shipwreck itself. The shipwreck itself was like 40 people died or 46.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's taken about 26 people. Divers go in. It's murky water.
Yep.
They can't find their way out.
Disoriented. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's some scary stuff down there. I mean, don't forget, the further down you go, the darker it gets. So,
Bill Madison is on the phone. He spent 4 years on a nuclear submarine. Thank you for your service, by the way.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Absolutely, buddy.
What do you think happened, just based on the limited information we have?
I think that they go down there, they have a small umbilical cable connected to the surface craft that's giving them communication, whatever power they have. You lose that cable, you're basically running on battery power for a while, and now you got no comms. Tapping on the hole, it's like me tapping on my door and you guys trying to hear it 3 miles away. You know, you're not going to hear that stuff. I mean, we have hydrophones. They have sonar drops from our Navy planes, like the P-3 Orions, they put in sonar buoys. They can hear stuff. But you're talking 3 miles down for something that's tiny. That's tough, you know.
So what do you think that you think that tapping was not them?
No. No, there's a lot of biologics down there. I mean, when I was on the sub, we were out in the ocean, and you can hear shrimp, you hear whales. It's amazing how much noise is underwater. You don't even realize.
What do shrimp say?
What does shrimp sound like?
It's a cocktail. We
call them carpenter fish. They click. They make a lot, as their tails pop, you know, they click. You hear a lot of clicking out there.
Wow, that's wild. Like, we hear crickets at night. When you're in the sub, you'll hear shrimp.
Right. Oh, they're water
crickets.
Yeah,
you do. You don't hear it through the hull. I mean, you have to go in the sonar room and put the guy's headset up.
Oh, okay.
Guys listen all the time.
Oh, gotcha.
But you hear it. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. Did, because they heard or reported to have heard tapping every 30 minutes. And I thought, what a genius thing to do if you're trapped underwater to keep everyone's brain occupied.
Focus, yeah.
We all have tasks every 30 minutes. We're going to do something so it breaks the day up. It doesn't become 6 hours. It's every 30 minutes we're going to do something. I thought that could be them. You don't think so?
Could be. I mean, let's cross our fingers. And even if it was, let's be realistic. Even if it was, what are they going to do? The furthest we can in the 1960s was go down about 850 feet. To rescue one of our nuclear submarines that unfortunately sunk and imploded off of Cape Cod, and we lost all 129 people, I think.
Oh, my God.
They couldn't rescue them. And there was a surface ship above them with the rescue chamber. Right now, the furthest I think we can go down and rescue is about 2,000 feet. So you're talking 10,000 feet further down. So even if they found them, let's say they send an ROV down, and they peered in the little tiny glass window, and they say, oh, my God, they're alive. How are they going to get them out?
Right.
You got 10,000 feet of cable to pull these people up. How long does it take? They'll use a winch. Think about that. Yeah. You're talking hours. I'm sorry. I'm just being a...
No, I got
hope
you.
I'm wrong. I really am.
Yeah, but, no, I got you. We all do.
Yeah.
But, you know, realistically, this is a craft that's not known to do what it's supposed to do. So that 96 hours of oxygen was, a dream. Who knows if they even had the tanks full? They had tanks that could fit 96 hours.
But did they have them full? Right.
And then what you said, the carbon monoxide filters, did they work the whole time? If the problem was they lost their electrical system, then nothing worked immediately, right? Like they would be able to get air, but it wouldn't clean the carbon monoxide out of the air, correct?
You got scrubbers and burners. I don't know how they would do that. Secondly, it's cold down there. You're talking 32.5 degrees. And don't forget, there's no sunlight over 200 feet down. So now it gets darker. The darker it is, the colder it gets. So when you're down 12,500 feet, that's, again, it's, you know, salinity of the water. You're not going to freeze the water. But it's cold, super cold. And how long can you guys stand underwater for 32 degrees?
Right.
I did a polar plunge once. I was out in seconds.
Yeah, you see a whole group of people run in, and then they all run out.
I led the pack on the way out.
Screaming.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And the Navy went up to the polar, you know, the ice cap. We call it a blue nose. And that was one of the things, is you go out in the cold, you run around the sun, run back in, and believe me, that it was terrible. You know, so.
What was the longest you were underwater in a submarine?
89 days.
89 days.
Damn.
That's really...
Months.
It's really unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's really... You know what? And I was on an attack boat, you know, what they call them, the fast attack boats, although mine was extremely slow. The missile boats, the Trident missile boats, the state, no, the Ohio class, they call them.
Yeah.
The ones that patrol waiting for the end of the world. Those guys go out 3 months at a time. They leave. They poke holes, we call it, for 3 months and come back. Then they change crews.
What does that mean, poke holes?
Just doing circles in the middle of nowhere in the water.
No.
Just out in the ocean waiting to be called for. What was that movie with Denzel? Denzel and Gene Hackman. That's a ballistic missile submarine. They just sit there. They don't go anywhere. They go out in the middle. They poke holes, and they come back after 3 months. And that happens on a three-month rotation. So 90 days is really nothing. You just pack a lot of food.
It's a lot for a person who can't even imagine climbing into one of those things.
As big as they are, yeah,
they feel small when you walk in them.
Well, you know, some of them are bigger. I'm 6'3". I'm a big guy.
Wow.
I wasn't even the biggest guy.
They called him Duck.
Were you clunking your head in that thing?
Only when you go through the watertight passageways, and I do get a scar on the top of my head for one of those things. But, yeah, there were some bigger dudes on board. I mean, they're pretty big.
Wow.
The missile boats, the ballistic ones, they're 575 feet long. You know, they're massive. If you ever get a chance to go to the Submarine Museum up in Groton, when you walk through the park a lot, there's a big ring. As you walk through the ring, that is the, I think it's called hole number 74, which is the widest of ballistic missile submarine. And you'd be like, holy cow, they are pretty big. Ours was three levels. Those are five levels.
Wow.
If you run around the missile tubes 20 times, it's 1 mile. That's how big it is.
Wow.
You don't realize. Whoa. 20 times around is a mile.
Well,
so,
geez. All right, so I'll do like 10.
Yeah, I was shocked.
No, but if we could build these submarines, and so I'm guessing if a 90-day patrol is typical, they could stay a lot longer than 90 days underwater.
Food. That's the only matter of fact, on an attack boat, you don't know where you're going or how long you're going out because a lot of it's classified. But when you get on the dock and you know you're going out, they don't tell you when, and you see trucks and trucks and trucks of food getting loaded, and you got to do it yourself on the sub. And you find out it's a submarine. You can't hold much stuff.
Yeah.
So you start putting, and everything's in cans. They call them number 10 cans. You start putting them on the deck or the floor, and then you put cardboard on top, and you start walking on the cardboard on top of the cans. You know you're going out for a while.
Oh,
you're like,
man.
Yeah, we got a lot of storage.
What do you do with the cans on board?
Wow.
Is that big garbage disposal on there or what?
It's a great question. A lot of people don't realize, like, you say to yourself, what do you do with the trash? Do you know what you do with trash in submarines? Nobody does. You shoot it. Exactly. Actually, it's gravity drop. So behind the galley, there's a tiny little room called the can rolling room.
Hey, Bill, we're losing you here. Can you, on the mouthpiece, please?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, you got that. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So you pack on board these pieces of sheet steel, and what you do is you roll them into 10-inch cylinders, and you put a top on it, the bottom of it, and you put some weights in it. They're called TDU weights. And then you weigh down your trash, and then – you put them in a torpedo tube that goes straight up and down. It's only a 10-inch tube.
Yeah.
And it's about 10 feet long. And you stack them up. And when you get to periscope depth, you open up this ball valve, and the garbage drops out the bottom. Now, they have to be weighted between 50 to 70 pounds because you don't want your trash floating to the surface in a place you're not supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they kind of know, like, all of a sudden they see, like, banana peels and stuff on this. Wait a minute.
Right. Right.
Wait a minute. 50 more pieces.
You got a minute. I got a I got a funny story. So after you load all the food or stores, we call it, on board the submarine, you load these cans. And they're flat, and they're about 3 feet by 3 feet. You know, again, you got to roll them in a roller. You have this roller in this room. And, you know, and everything's a submarine because it's tiny. You have to load all these weights on board to weigh the trash cans down. And the weights are 8 pounds apiece. They look like, I don't know, like little weights from a weight bench or hockey pucks. And they're 10 inches. Each one of these weights is 8 pounds. There's 10 in a box. It's 80 pounds a box. And the box is about the size of a car battery. And you got to haul hundreds of these boxes on board. So by the time your day is done loading all the food, you start loading these stupid weights on, half of them get dumped overboard between the submarine and the dock.
Oops.
Those guys are just, screw this, they're just dropping it overboard. So I was in Norfolk, and when we were out to sea, we got a report somewhere, I think we're in Naples, Italy, or something, that they had our pier getting dredged, they're digging out the bottom, and they found thousands and thousands and thousands of these boxes of these weights because nobody wanted to load them. I got tons of stories of silly stuff that we've done underway.
Well, that's awesome.
You know, 90 days or 89 days on the water, you do know it's a long time. And
yeah.
The way to get away from it is we don't live on a 24-hour clock. So you're on duty for 6 hours. Let's just say you have to be on watch at midnight. You're off watch at 6 a.m., correct? So you go downstairs and you get breakfast, and then you're off watch for 12 hours. Then you go back to watch 12 hours later, which is now 6 p.m. So you're getting shoved back every 6 hours. So now you wake up and you go on watch at 6 p.m., you have dinner, you get off at midnight. Now when do you come back to work? 12 hours later at noon, so you get up, you're at lunch. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you don't really check the day. You just know the meal. So at midnight, what they call it, mid-rats, you have, like, pizza or chili, whoever's making dinner.
Oh, I'm on chili on board.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Oh, the food is phenomenal.
Submarines, but I'm just in the air.
That's what they say about joining the Navy.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a cot and you're going to have three meals.
Three hats and a cot.
Well, I was lucky. The submarine I was, I don't know if you guys Googled it. I give you a producer the name of it. And we were lucky. We went out to sea. We had a great chief of the boat. He was able to build racks, or we had a passageway in the middle of the sonar equipment space, and we walked around it. So we had six guys and six racks. We didn't have the hot rack. Hot rack is when you're in bed, and then you get woken up for watch, and somebody jumps in your bed. He goes to sleep.
Oh.
Then when you get up, you got to throw him out of bed. It's always hot. That's why they call it hot racking.
Oh, yes.
We didn't have to
sweat.
Do that.
Good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a nephew on board right now.
On a sub.
Yep, and then it's funny because he never tans. He's always very white.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for coming on.
You guys want to hear?
We want to hear them all the time.
Oh,
so we got to have you back real soon.
Definitely.
And you know, look, we all are probably thinking the same thing with these missing people, and we're hoping that we're all wrong. So we're hoping for a miracle.
Yep.
I agree with you, but you know, facts are facts.
Yeah. All right, Bill. Thank you. Thanks again for your service. Thanks for coming on. Jimmy Top with Vibe Nation on the show. Good morning, brother.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. My pants are soiled, but I'm good.
It's my fault. I'm sorry. After 10 years or whatever long we've been doing this, I went on the wrong box. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, I was switching back and forth as well. So good to hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, let's sweat out here.
Yeah. I only go one way, not back and forth.
What an announcement this week with Earth, Wind, and Fire and Derek Jeter.
Very excited. Not so much about Earth, Wind, and Fire. I've probably promoted them 100 times. But having a meet and greet with Derek Jeter opportunity is just a treasure for this Yankee fan. That's for sure.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yep. I'm loving it.
Run us through this. Tickets are on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m., livenation.com. And when you click on to buy tickets, you can then go to the meet and greet and purchase that as well.
Yes, and the meet and greet includes a photo with Derek Jeter, an autographed photo mat. Not sure what that is, a photo mat, but an autographed one. And a bobblehead, which I actually watched in the Yankee game last night, saw that on June 23rd, it's Derek Jeter bobblehead. So I guess he's going to steal a bunch and bring him over to the amphitheater to give them out. Plus, you get a complimentary commemorative tote bag and two Yankee tickets.
Nice.
That's really incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Two Yankee tickets. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, you're basically meeting the Babe Ruth of our day.
Truth.
Yes, yes, yes. First ballot Hall of Famer, unquestionably. No argument there from even Boston Red Sox fans that he's a Hall of Famer. He actually is one of the few Yankees that went up to Boston and was shown respect.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's a very rare occurrence, and to do it in your home state and then take the picture with Derek and then have the autograph, which is another rare item.
Yeah.
And then to go see the game, but also you're seeing Earth, Wind, and Fire. But then to know that a portion of the ticket money and I think all, if not most of the money for the meet and greet goes to Derek Jeter's turn two.
Good point. It's a really good point. Yes, $10 of everybody's ticket is going to go to turn two. So thank you, everybody who's going to buy a ticket. You're making a $10 donation to his charity. And then the meet and greet is $995, and all $995 goes to his charity also. So we're hoping to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for his turn two charity. And it's to help underprivileged kids go to school and learn life lessons and things like that. So, it's a good deed for all. And plus, you get a real great opportunity to meet one of the greatest baseball players of all time.
Win-win.
If you think about the list of names that you and Howard have been able to pull into this Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater in Bridgeport over the, what is this, third season?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's amazing.
It's
really mind-blowing, actually.
It's really mind-blowing.
Well, I have to tell you, we worked hard on it, but I give a lot of credit to Howard. He built an amazing amphitheater that... like when I approached Earth, Wind, and Fire about doing it, they're on tour with Lionel Richie this summer. They're not doing their own tour. And when I approached Earth, Wind, and Fire about it, for Derek Jeter's sake, because we were working with Derek Jeter on this, Howard knows Derek Jeter's people, and they were willing to take a day off from the tour to do It's a Monday, so it was an easy day off. The show's a Monday, and they were very excited about the Derek Jeter component and replaying the amphitheater also, because they love the amphitheater.
Who doesn't?
Right.
It's awesome. I love
it. Who doesn't?
Place. Yeah.
I mean, look at this list. You know, Foo Fighters, Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart.
Yep.
Derek Jeter now.
Yeah.
And then all of the other bands who have played there. It's been a magnet for greatness.
Exactly.
And it's going to be a great night, because what we really wanted to do, since everybody was giving a part of the ticket price, and we didn't raise the ticket price $10, we're subtracting it from the ticket, so what we would normally charge, so it's not an additional charge. We thought it would be appropriate if Derek in some way acknowledged to the audience a thank you. So he agreed to be, quote, the opening act.
Awesome.
That's great.
And that's cool.
He's going to go on stage, and we're going to find a moderator of his choice. And there'll be questions, and he'll answer questions, and he'll do 15 to 20 minutes on stage for everybody at the show.
Wow.
And the meet and greet will start at 6. That will run to 7:30. 7:30, he'll take the stage. He will do his spiel, whatever it is, his talk, his questions and answers. And then about 8, 8:15, Earth, Wind & Fire will take the stage and do their full show.
Holy crap.
It's a great night.
Jimmy, you have to get a picture taken with Derek, because, you know, we don't think about it until, like, you go to Yankee Stadium
right
back when he was playing. That guy is friggin' tall.
Oh, yeah.
He's a monster.
Yeah, I have a small TV, so I didn't know.
You know, you're really right on that, because my grandchildren met him about 7, 8, 9 years ago, something like that, and he's a very tall person. He's 6'2", but I think he's even taller than 6'2". You know, he doesn't look that tall in a baseball uniform.
No.
Right.
He looks... It's the stripes. It's the stripes.
Yeah. I thought the same...
So nobody in jail looks tall, I guess.
Exactly right.
First
well,
time...
Well, they're going a different way.
I saw him at Yankee Stadium. I'm like, holy crap.
Right. Like, oh my God!
He's a monster. You just picture him being like normal height.
Yeah.
And then I saw him again standing next to A-Rod. I'm like, oh my God, the Twin Towers.
Right.
Yeah, really.
Have you ever talked to Derek Jeter?
No, I've never talked to Derek Jeter.
Wow, what a cool experience that is. So look at this.
I can't wait.
Jimmy Coppock, Live Nation, his whole life has never talked to this guy.
Yeah.
You get a chance to do it.
Like, oh, I've arranged for that already.
It's in the works.
Part of the deal. I get a meet and greet.
Damn
great.
Yeah,
no, you, but also us.
Right.
You know, and yes. You just make a donation to Turn 2.
Exactly.
How cool is that?
I did say that. I don't want a free meet and greet. I will donate the $995, but I want a meet and greet. No,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's limited. The number of people is limited that he can do. So
yeah,
I bought my ticket right away.
Awesome. That's right. He can't be there forever. So yeah, it's a limited number. That's right. He's from Harold Perrineau. Hey, Harold.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Good, thank you. Your voice sounds deeper than I'm used to. From,
yes.
It's just early.
Children, from
is
from.
It really him?
It's from.
It might not be me. It might be one of the monsters in the woods.
Oh, see, now you scared me.
We're really excited to talk to you and see if we can get anything out of you about the season cliffhanger or whatever. But it's a weird coincidence, kind of like a Lost show moment, where yesterday, right at this time, we're talking to an author, and she brought you up, and it was not planned.
Nope.
I wrote a big chapter about the TV show Lost. A character disappeared, a character named Michael, played by the actor Harold Perrineau, after 2 seasons, and this show ran for 6 seasons. And there are differing accounts, but essentially at the time, Harold Perrineau told me, he said, I feel like I just got fired when he got the call about this. So, and he had raised issues with scripts and with, the depiction of black characters. So most workplaces in Hollywood are very autocratic, and there's 1 or 2 or maybe 3 people who have real power. There's just a legacy of people being vindictive over the most minor things.
You guys got to talk to Mo Ryan yesterday, huh?
That's right.
Yep.
How's her book doing?
You know, if she's talking to us, probably not good.
Right. Let's be honest.
I'm kidding.
Let's be honest.
I'm kidding. It's the number one show in Connecticut, so I'm sure it's doing well. But it's an interesting subject, and you've become kind of the hook. Like the, I don't want to call it like a hit single, but it's like the, you know, people love controversy and things of that nature. And like you've become a talking point about this book.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, listen, it's a book that she's written and she's done a great job. She's a great writer. She's written to tell a story that she's interested in telling about, you know, power in Hollywood and probably beyond Hollywood. And she just asked me to talk about my experience. For me, I'm just actually just talking about, you know, a thing that happened to me, like, you know, part of the things that we all deal with, you know, difficult things in our lives. And so this is not, you know, this is not a book about me telling the story. For some reason,
right.
I do come up a lot. But you know, it's about a part of my, you know, career that, you know, was pretty tricky. And we did it, kept moving, and then to still find ourselves here now. So, you know, hopefully you guys had a good time talking to Mo Ryan and she, you know, talked about the rest of her book. And all the things that she's and the stories that she's interested in telling there.
No, and she's done a great job, and I think it's an interesting story, and I think it speaks to who you are as a person and an actor, and your commitment to the material that you're doing.
Right. Yeah. That's really that for me. That's all I'm kind of interested in. I mean, look, not all I'm interested in, but
yeah, you'd like to make some money.
There's other things, yeah.
Yeah, I like to make some money. I like to feed my kids. You know, right. I like everybody else. They want to eat. They want to go to school.
Exactly.
We've all taken those calls like, wait, how much does it pay?
Right.
I don't care what you want me to do.
I'll do it. I'll do it twice.
All right, so can you give us Harold Perrineau from is on the show, and can you give us a tease on this?
So, listen, this whole season has been kind of crazy and phenomenal. In the last episode, you know, not only can you not go outside in the dark, but now you can't even go to sleep because, you know, there's something new that's happening in the town. And in this finale, which is coming up on Sunday, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you exactly what goes down. So,
oh wow!
I think we lost him.
Something happened to his phone. Oh my god!
He's blown away.
Oh my god!
Wait! What was that? Hold it!
No, one time only.
No, I will tell you this: at the end of the episode, you are going to scream. I read it, and I literally called up John Griffith, the writer, and I was like, I was screaming expletives at him. I was like, "You mother! I can't believe you!" Like,
wow!
So
you're going to be in Mo's next book.
I hear that all the time, in a different tone though. More angry.
Well, that's crazy because Boyd's character has been through everything. Like, there's no one's gone through more of a character ever in the two seasons than what you've gone through. You're the leader of a town. You're losing your mind. Yeah. There's been worms in your skin. You've gotten bile on bullets. You've done everything. So for you to think that's crazy is nuts.
Yeah. And it is crazy. Trust me. You're just gonna, it is. It's a crazy ride. And Jack Bender, who's our executive director, he directed this one. Jack Bender was also on Lost. He was the executive director there. He is phenomenal, and so he really knows how to tell a story. And
right, Pat, do you think he can figure out what happened?
You can't figure out anything on this show ever.
Can you ask a couple questions that maybe will lead to?
You know what? The thing is, no one thought season one would end the way it did. I mean, he literally is out in the woods. You think that Boy's going to finally solve this.
Right,
he's
don't
out
tell
in the woods. No,
I haven't
season one,
started
season two.
Yet.
So, no. But so I'm not. But you think he's going to figure it out. And then we're stuck in a whole new thing. And now the guy who was our savior is now losing his mind even more. So for him to say this is crazy.
Harold's our savior?
Yeah. Harold holds everything together. Boyd holds everything together. But he also can't hold himself together. He's gone through everything.
He's the leader we want, though. Like, if he's going
but he doesn't
want to
be the leader that we want. So
yes. He doesn't want to be the leader.
No, he's lost his wife. His son's pregnant in a monster world. It's crazy. Everything is happening is nuts.
Hey, you know, a couple of things with you, Harold. First of all, you're in shows with one word. Lost, Oz, From.
Yep. Yeah, multiple
Matrix.
And family around you.
I'm a simple dude. I'm a simple dude.
If I see a script and I'm like a member of Harold's family, I'm like, yeah, I probably don't last long, do I?
I'm in trouble.
I'm in trouble. Damn it.
Exactly. If it's a one-word script, you're gonna worry that it's gonna be weird. Yeah, it becomes like Grapes of Wrath. It's like, we're not doing that. That's ridiculous.
Is anyone else gonna die? Everyone dies. Is anyone big dying in this last episode?
Someone is.
It's the thing I cannot tell.
You don't have to say who. Just say they do.
Right.
It's a thing I can't mention. You will.
They're dying.
So good. Trust me. It's so good.
Yeah, I think I know who it is. But
well, if you're saying
even if they die, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
If you're saying, I'm just trying to figure out. Are you? Let me see. Are you looking for work now?
He can't die.
Yeah, like everyone goes bananas if he dies, right? Like
none of that.
Show, yeah.
He's in every scene.
Here's what I will tell you. It really depends on your definition of death.
Yeah. Because that's happened before,
really
too.
It depends on your definition of death.
Oh.
Huh.
Like a priest died in one season, and he still talks to him all the time. So it's like,
that's really stubborn, huh?
That's all I can say about that. But I think, it depends on what you
Please tell me you killed Randall.
I got to let him go. He's got to do another one of these things. But, wow, what a great way to end this.
Yeah.
Harold, come back anytime. Yeah. You don't need this, radio tour thing to call us.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, man. You're
anytime.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'll take you up on that because you guys are a lot of fun.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This was the Chaz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Chaz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.